Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remembering Claudia Emerson. Thank you all for being here. Today, we're really going to focus on giving voice to Claudia's poems. And with that in mind, I'll invite many of you who are interested in maybe even participating by reading a poem today. We'll invite you up to the microphone. But today, we'll start simply by introducing our panelists who are going to lead us off in the memorial reading. To my left, I have Wyatt Prunty, and then Jill McCorkle, and Kathleen Graber, and I am Amelia Phillips. And many thanks to our wonderful organizer of this event, Mary Flynn. And then we'll have a few more readers that are going to come up from the audience. We've got Sandra Beasley, Mary Catherine Calloway, James Davis May, Erica Dawson, TJ Jarrett, Christine Marr, and Adam Vines and Mark Jarman. And if any of you would like to add on to that list, please feel free to come up. If you do come to the microphone, feel free to let us know a little bit about how you knew Claudia and how she might have impacted your life or your work. I'll go ahead and start by inviting Kathy Graber to come to the microphone and start off our reading.
Claudia was my colleague at Virginia Commonwealth. She set an incredible example as not only an exemplary craftsperson of poetry, but an extraordinary teacher. If any of you are her students, or you know her students, or you ever run into her students, they will go on at length about the tireless dedication that she exhibited in the classroom, and more importantly, even outside of the classroom. Not just as a person who spoke about the power of words and the importance of words, but also someone who was a model of what it means to be a fully engaged human being on every level. I'm going to read the title poem from The Opposite House. It occurred to me that The Opposite House here is really describing one of those salvage warehouses where all of the doors and doorknobs and fireplace mantles and lintel beams and old floors. If you're restoring your house, you can go and sort of pick something out that's been salvaged. Everything has its place, so there's a room for the doors and a room for the mantles. The opposite house. This place, a cavernous warehouse of houses, dismantled, cataloged, recorded here according to part rendered particle, elemental, the sentient stuff of space stored in metaspace. This room for doors, thresholds, staircases, risers and stretchers, banisters, hand-worn smooth. This for scrollwork, moldings, egg and tongue, for floorboards, tongue in groove. This room for windows, sills, sashes, transoms. This for mantles, shadow scents of dead fires. This room of bins, hinges, doorknobs, latches, locks, all of it aged. Orphaned, artifacts of the slower fires of neglect. Abandonment before bone pickers raced the demolition for what might be salvaged to sell again. Like prizing gold from the teeth of the dead. To be remeasured, leveled, grafted as though remade into the agelessness of someone else's household now. As long as they are here, though, the fact of every door remains reference to an antecedent made vague, a cellar hole, an empty socket somewhere, or a sandy lot opposite some newer house, a sidewalk's stone's arrival into grass. Are daffodils blooming like wild, unmeant things in what appears an old field without design, the kind sumac prefers and will encircle its own transfiguring salvage, that slow, unambiguous.
It's a great honor to be here and have the chance to hear Claudia's words. Claudia Emerson was just one of the best storytellers ever, and I first met her on the page, thrilled by these poems, so rich with stories being told, and then I met her in person, her first time at Swanee. Those times when we would get together became a highlight of the year. We often took long walks, many stories told, but my memories of those walks and the stories told is that though Claudia often had just the right literary reference or quote that would just come out of her mouth, our talks were deeply rooted in daily life. We talked a lot about food. We talked a lot about marriage. We talked about our mothers. We talked about dogs and cats. We told stories that brought great laughter and then stories that just as easily brought tears. These will always be conversations I cherish. A connection with Claudia was like reading one of her poems, where you find both an exuberance and love for life and also the compassion and constant awareness of what's missing. A sharp, no bullshit eye and a great wit and sense of humor and a heart absolutely overflowing. And then there was also that little southern girl there, deep at the root of it all, and the giggle that came with it. And it was amazing to see this person who had all of these great accomplishments behind her and shelved in important places, but also kept that giddy, girlish spirit, a spirit and connection to childhood that I think served her so well in working with her students. She was an amazing teacher, and she never lost sight, I think, of what it felt like to be vulnerable or in childhood, and there had a great generosity of sharing her spirit. So I thought one of the early poems that just completely blew me away is Homecoming. Homecoming. The camera is trained on the door, no one in the frame, only the dog sleeping. And then finally, I see this was to surprise you, filming your arrival, the dog's delight. Only now, 6 years distant, can this seem scripted, meant? The long blank minutes she waited, absent but there, behind the lens, as though she directs me to notice the motion of her chest in the rise and fall of the frame. And here, to understand the one cough, nothing, the clearing of her throat. Then at last you come home to look into the camera she holds, and past her into me, invisible, unimagined other, who joins her in seeing through our transience the lasting of desire.
I'm going to just read a short one. It's part of a series that was in the Impossible Bottle that is echoed, to my mind, in The Opposite House and another series of short poems. And I'll come back to those. Jill was talking about Claudia. One thing that I think these will all demonstrate, but maybe the choices I'm making will demonstrate in a certain way that I'm interested in. Now, Claudia, of course, played the guitar and sang well. She and Kent were really good at that, and they had a great time doing it, and they tended to pull all of the rest of us into that activity when they were in Sewanee, and I guess I might have been with them one or two other places where music was a central part of the evening. And music, that the kind of music they performed, songs, was controlled by melody. Claudia's method of writing, particularly earlier, I think, more often than not, she would catalog, she would aggregate, she would build image after image after image, or detail after detail, and then end with something that summarized it all, usually an image, something figurative at the end. I think what I see in the last book, and maybe movement towards that in the next to last book, is the use of statement, or something that's more of a conclusion and less of an observation. And I have a whole riff that there won't be time to get into, but reading various things, and I think it had to do with her suffering, and it changed her way of understanding or dealing with the world she was living in and continuing to affirm. This is number 8 in a series from Impossible Bottle, Infusion Suite, you know what that is. She was going for chemo. And so each one of these poems is an installment concerning that process. Number 8 is one that strikes me and I think leads to other poems and so forth. I know the nurses' names by now, recognize several patients, our familiarity with each other, that of folks on the same bus, its slowness, a shared slow jolt alarm, the lumbering, maddening, then numbing. A woman I have never seen, purple turban, prefers jaundiced leaves, birdless feeders someone forgot to fill to any of us. I have chosen to look out that window at what passes for the world. We all have. What we do not know about each other can go unspoken. Our old ordinary means nothing here, and we know already the ordinary that this is and is. So, a poem of endurance.
The pleasure of knowing Claudia through Swanee Writers Conference. I met her there when I went in 2011 as a scholar, and she was my reader and workshop leader. And I got to know Claudia back in Virginia as well when I was at Virginia Commonwealth University. We stayed in touch and was able to, in the last few months of her life, go to her house a few times with my friend Lena Moses Schmidt. We had been both her student as an undergraduate and as a graduate student, and we would sit up in Claudia's treehouse, and I would bring a pie, and we would eat the pie and drink wine and share poems. After she passed away, Kent asked me to work on placing poems from a third manuscript that has not been published yet, called Claude Before Time and Space. And I wanted to read a poem from that manuscript. It's also a poem that was the last poem she showed me in that treehouse. And she said, do you have any suggestions on this poem? And I said, no, not at all. I wanted to read that poem. It's called Midwife. All the women pregnant, it seems to me, in a hollowed out shadow carved Tennessee farmland. Hippie buses and vans, our hair in long braids, feathers woven into them. And we all resist white fluorescence, sterile forceps, needles. So I decide to learn it myself. And I do. Read old texts, study grainy photographs, mostly the babies, come out all right on their own. Until I have guided thousands into these close rooms, windows open to summer, or open to winter, to cicadas or snow, a sameness to it. After all, the crowning, glistening whirl of hair beneath the fontanelle, iridescent pulse of well eye, one that will close, that is already closing over time. I see the rarer cord, strangled ones, too early or too late, hidden twins, ones who come fists first, breeches stills, but there is the one singular one, born in the bread truck his parents have driven, there they are living in it, broken down beside a foundation they are digging out of mud. When I arrive, he is already coming. I see first his mouth, so like his mother's sucking, before he breathes, the rest of the head appears. I see no skull, just the brain exposed before the rush of the rest of him. Perfect, I have read about it, this thing the book's glossary defines as monster, mutation, a salutation, freak. So I take him from her. He breathes on his own. I let him. He does not laugh or cry. For 1 month he lives, though he does make a sound, otherworldly. And after he dies, only after, do the other infants in the barn-like nursery make it for a while echoing something, not quite language. Not quite song, unsyllabled, that vowel that does not rise or fall, bottomless in that way. And what they have learned from him is as though from some place beyond, that only he among them could recall, become in the raw wake of him, something they must remember, and will, in the telling and retelling, they are, I am, for a while now, sure, this sure of it. And we'll have our next reader, Sandra Beasley, come up.
I remember the first time that Claudia was at the Suwannee Conference, because it was in 2008, and I was there as a fellow, and we exchanged a lot of meaningful eye glances across big rooms. It was a little intimidating to both of us. I had met her years before at the University of Virginia when she was reading for Pinion, and it was so amazing to then hear her again reading from Late Life when I was a student at American. And you knew from the electricity in the air surrounding that reading that this was the collection for her, this was the roof coming off of her work. And when the Pulitzer came her way, the golden anvil, as I think she called it in one email to me, it was just so overwhelming to have known her before that ride and to watch it happen. I was never formally her student, but I really admired her curiosity and her intent on researching the world around us. If she was going to write a poem about a piano fire, she was going to, in fact, have someone burn that piano. I'll just say that I was at a Virginia Festival of the Book one year, and she and Kelly Cherry were standing adjacent to a group of us, younger women, all poets, and I overheard them kind of murmuring to each other, and I heard Claudia say, it's just so great seeing these young women poets. She always gave me the gift of mentorship, and I feel like with what I do in the world, she also left me with the understanding that you pay that forward. Buying the painted turtle, two boys, not quite men, pretended to let it go only to catch it again and again. And the turtle, equally determined, each time gave its heart to escape them. We were near the base of the old dam where the river became a translucent, hissing wall fixed in falling where, by the size of it, the turtle had long trusted its defense, the streaming algae, green, black, red, the garden of its spine, not to fail it. They held it upside down. The yellow plastron exposed, they hoisted it over their heads like a trophy. I left it to you to do the bargaining, exchange the money for us to save it, let it go. Fast, it disappeared into deeper water, returning to another present, where the boulders cut the current to cast safer shadows of motionlessness. We were already forgotten. Then, like most gods, after floods recede, after fevers break, we did not talk about what we had bought. An hour, an afternoon, a later death worth whatever we had to give for it.
Mary Catherine Calabasas.
I was so fortunate to be Claudia's publisher. LSU Press published all of Claudia's books, and it was just such a treat. I can't tell you how much fun it was to work with her on these. And one of my most incredible memories is when she and Kent and I went to New York when she received her Pulitzer Prize. And there have been many people who've won Pulitzer Prizes, but I guarantee you there was no one who enjoyed that occasion more than she did. I'll just tell you one story. Before you win a Pulitzer Prize, your book, of course, does not have a sticker on it, because that would be presumptive. She was talking about how she had books, but they didn't have the sticker on it, the lovely sticker that says you're a Pulitzer Prize winner. So I reached into my bag and pulled out an enormous roll of stickers and handed them to her. And I think her laughter still is ringing around the streets of New York over that. She got an enormous charge over that. The other wonderful thing that I always loved about Claudia is that she did not go through school and go straight into an MFA program and then immediately become the wonderful poet that she was. She had all these experiences, including her time at the U.S. Postal Service delivering mail on a very rural route. And she told some wonderful stories that I'm sure many of you have heard about those days. So I was going to read one called Rural Letter Carrier. For a brief while, the 86 miles gave some illusion of travel, the season's slow cycling part of it, the sky moving from cloud to clearing, fields turned under or crowded with corn, crows, soybeans, tobacco, snow. But the road did not change, finally. Not the straight stretches nor rain-fretted curves, the relentless echo of gravel ping, the hushing of dust, mud hiss, and skunk musk. The houses went down over time, the men dying away, then the widows, In the yards of emptied houses, their children went on living in trailers with tires on the roofs. And the names on the mailboxes and the ones in the ragged graveyards were the same. Some people hung their clothes from barbed wire fences to dry. And as long as I had been driving that route, delivering her check, one old woman still hid behind the trunk of a sycamore in her yard until I drove off again. Some days, I stopped at the country store where a few bottles of soda floated like blasted fish in the drink box, where men checked deer and turkeys and bought bait, where no one knew any news but of who died. It only took my Sunday absence for a wren or sparrow to begin a nest in a mailbox, forgotten open, or a hornet to finish one that I'd find hanging down like a gray wattle or a venomous goiter from the throat. They said there wouldn't be letters anymore, what with people getting news through the air, and money just numbers on a screen that added up to a worse nothing, stored in a machine somewhere, all of it invisible and flying reckless, swarmless as thoughts never meant to be spoken, then spoken. I had driven through enough lonely days to believe sometimes I pass by those hours instead, like estranged houses to which I might return some distant day, not to deliver a day's worries and ordinary temptations, but the letter addressed in a hand so far away, so familiar, it would need no other understanding, having found in me its last and only way.
Claudia was my editor at LSU. I remember when she got the imprint, she came up to me and said, "We like your manuscript, but there's a catch. Our names will be sort of entwined forever here. Is that okay with you?" That would be just fine, Claudia. She was so kind to my family. She was so kind to me. I learned a lot about generosity from her and a lot about craft. And I wanted to read a little bit of an article. This is from the opposite house, The Ocularist. One of the earliest eyes was found with the ancient corpse of a woman in Persia, hers made of gold, to resemble a small sun, iris and sclera, chaste rays, clear testament not to the eye, but to the light that had been made go out. The later ones, crafted of glass, I studied and practiced for fire-blown beauty, learning another fragility, vulnerability to the body's heat, the way glass shatters inside the fleetest fever. For its give and forgiveness, I worked then in ivory wax, and after perfecting the shape, cloned with paint and iris, small blood vessels from filaments of red silk, then sealed the whole beneath an acrylic veneer, thin and visible. Mine was always the smaller studio, the work fine, lonely as a jeweler's, my needs the same, a window, a lamp, lighted eye loop. Half sculptor, half illustrator, I thought for a long time I was crafting something place-saving at best, an orbit warmed imposture, elegy, implied narrative of loss, flying glass or knife, a thumb's determined gouge. But I learned finally to manipulate the way light played the sphere, the pupil seeming to dilate from dusk or desire, becoming architect not of form, but of function. Not of object, but of the seen self, enticing it not to look away. The patient's eye took with it, after all, only periphery and the perception of depth, asides the truest beholding has never required. So I aligned the gaze for the whole-sided world, that it might find some small figment of itself contained there, already in the brain. I could make it believe. The fact of what was not there, of no matter at all, the final measure of an eye's worth, in fact, its complete disappearance, and with it mine, into the opposite eye that was such belief.
Erica Dawson?
I met Claudia at the Swanee Writers Conference, and she was just by far one of the coolest people that I think I've ever met. What was interesting about our relationship was that we never talked about poetry, ever. After she would read at the conference, I would tell her, as one should when you listen to her work, that it was absolutely stunning and amazing, and she would say kind things to me after my staff reading. But beyond that, we didn't really talk about poetry at all. We often talked about my propensity to wear really high shoes, despite my height, and she was just sort of in shock and awe that I had the ability to stand in them all day, and I was jealous of her ability to sing late night at the French House, because I can't sing at all. As a specific story that I think really speaks to our relationship, as I started to get a little older and longer in the tooth at Swanee and more tattoos started to appear on my body, she was always interested in them and how I chose what I wanted to have imprinted on my body. She wanted a tattoo as well, but she didn't really know what she wanted to get because it had to mean something to her. We probably started having those conversations in 2009 or 2010, the summer before she died. She decided that she wanted to get an I Am tattooed on her wrist, and I wrote to her and I said, I'm going to do that too. My best friend Juliana Gray and I, who also worked at Swanee, we decided on a Saturday that we were going to go get our tattoos. I couldn't fit mine on my wrist, so it's on my ankle, and Juliana's is also on her wrist, and we posted them on Facebook at the exact same time. And about 45 seconds after the pictures went up, Claudia wrote to both of us, and all it said was a simple thank you. I thought often about, and I still think about it now, tattooing a trochee on the other ankle, but because Claudia doesn't have one, I don't want to have one either. So this is entrance from the opposite house. One. Some evenings, her own house convinces her she is already dead. Photographs framed at portals into which she sometimes falls awake in another room. The phone is silent in its cradle, food tasteless, even salt dumb grains of glass. She calls someone who does not answer, but a voice cannot convince her otherwise. The self-dead who called another woman's husband with an innocent question, the excuse to hear his voice. The self who would have had a cigarette about now, the lighter in a drawer here somewhere, her initials engraved, a flourish of cursive. She craved the sound of the thumb wheel scrape against flint, small frame, that first long drag, the practiced rings of smoke she formed with a mouth painted to disappear behind them. The glass of dryest sherry cannot persuade her, though. She drinks it anyway. Her hair, her fingernails, her nakedness against the naked floor, the body unbathed for days, some days not enough. Too small to see into the upper nest, she feels the sleeve of its body well muscled with eggs. She knows her mother's fury will not only be at the eggs lost, but that the setting egg devoured also, a doorknob of oblong, crazed porcelain meant to trick the hens into laying. She would have tried to kill the snake anyway, but now has become more certain of it, lifting out the stuporous body and quickly, deftly severing the head, offensive mouth with a paring knife, the way she had been taught. She massages out a fluid, wasteful braid of whites and yolks shell specked, what would have been more than enough, she thinks, for a pound cake, before the knob at last falls with a thud, like anything but an egg, to the ground. Small, insistent entrance to another house, any house, a painted door, and all to herself, one full room.
Like Erica said, we never really talked craft. I do remember once I had one of her students at Swanee in 2010, and I went to the class. I came back to work at 9 o'clock on Monday morning and promptly quit my job, which she told me was batshit insane. Like, I'm like, I quit my job? I don't know how that happened. She's like, are you crazy? But then I drove down to Mississippi and wrote my first book. It was done in like 6 weeks after we had talked about what I wanted to do. She's just got my head straight. And my last conversation with her, we were going to talk about some line of craft, like we tried to do that, but somehow she remembered this anecdote. She met this man who was missing these two fingers, like in a store or something. And she just looked at him and was like, what happened to your hand? And he described some horrible factory accident and then follows up by, only 8-year-olds ask that question. We just kind of laughed. And then she left and she's like, we'll talk about that thing later. And that's the last thing we said to each other. This poem is called Atlas. In the museum's gift shop at the foot of Mary's Heights, a lone slim volume entitled Orthopedic Injuries of the Civil War lay remaindered at half price, a book many had handled without wanting to own. I could not resist either, looking inside, compelled by two photographs, portraits on the cover of the same formal man. In one image, both of his legs are missing, and in the other, he wears prosthetic limbs, bare for the camera. In image after image, the book catalogs particular survivals organized by anatomic regions of loss, extremities, upper and lower, thigh, shoulder, and some men are halved, and the next photograph risen from ether or chloroform, from opium whiskey, to wear inventions of wood, leather, metal. They had survived the bullet, the surgeon's knife. And now this first rough reconstruction of the body, to look past the aperture into the photographer, wearing a century's dark call, and then into me. I bought the book, but not for the unique disfigurements. It was for the shared expression I wanted, a resolve so sharply formed I couldn't believe they ever met another death.
I met Claudia at my first year of BCU in the MFA program. She was my workshop leader in the spring. As everyone has said, she was a wonderful person, but she was also a fierce teacher. She had this habit of holding her pen like a dagger and compulsively clicking the end of it. You were always engaged. I'm going to read the first poem of Impossible Bottle. Metastasis, intercession. Too late here, perhaps, for some intercession. The physician speaks to his screen. Instead, to the all of you, it has become. His words, not imagined now, but real, and your sorrow is ecstatic, something you do not feel. You hear your own voice at a distance, and the abuela bush outside, at home, a voiceless god flames there. Late bees, a burn, slow, miraculous, such green. There, there you are. Thank you.
Adam Vines.
I too met Claudia at the Sewanee Writers Conference, I guess in 2008, 2009, and became very good friends with her every summer. And I'm not sure if we ever talked about poetry. We talked about politics. We understood each other. But she did ask to see my manuscript, even though I wasn't in a workshop with her. And I said, no, you've got so much. She said, give me that manuscript. So she marked it up, and damn if it didn't get chosen within 4 or 5 months then for a prize. And then she was kind enough to write a blurb for it as well. I'm saying that I didn't know Claudia. She had mentored me for probably 10 years before I met her, and I had already been teaching her poems, rereading her poems, and I continue to teach and reread. I had a student who asked for Claudia's email, and it was about a month before Claudia passed. The poem that I'm going to read meant a great deal to her. She was going through a transformation. I'm not sure if she ever read the email or not, but I guess it doesn't really matter. Latin teacher. Seamed stockings, sensible shoes, cardigan buttoned all the way to the top. She greets each of them by name as they enter her classroom, rebellious, identical. They want Italian, French, a younger teacher, anything but this woman, fluent in a language that will not travel. The deep south of her vowels, slow as the minute hand on the grinding clock behind her. Her hair is braided and coiled, contained in a bun, substantial as a hornet's nest, ashen gray. But their mothers also were made to take it, translations all the more hated for being inherited. Then they are assigned to her table in the den of the dining room, where she directs them to eat even popsicles with a knife and fork. She serves fried chicken by inquiring if they prefer to walk or fly. And they learn to choose the leaner wing because they believe it pleases her. At Halloween, in the darkened gymnasium beside the tub of water where girls bob for apples, she sits in a small booth to tell fortunes, peers into their palms, esto perpetua. And again, the same lie of a life so long they don't listen, their attention's lost instead in the swung shock of her hair let down in luminescence, brushing the floor like a curtain just closing behind her.
Mark Jarman.
I've known Claudia's work before I met Claudia. I met Claudia in 1993, and I already was seeing her poems and her fiction, and wrote her a fan letter. And subsequently, we stayed in touch. We didn't actually meet until, I think, 2002 at the Southern Festival of Books, where we were on a panel together, and she was writing the poems that would go into Late Life. And she introduced me to Kent. I was meeting her for the first time, and I was meeting the man that she had recently married. We really got to know each other when we worked together at Sewanee. I'm going to read a poem. I came in a little late. I don't know that anybody read Migraine. One of the things that I think is wonderful about Claudia's work has always been is the way she gets inside of an experience. If it's an experience you have not had, you understand it. If it's an experience you have had, you recognize it. And of course, the poems in the final book give us an experience that we're all going to have. And it is startling, the honest gaze with which she looks at her own coming death. But this is Migraine, Aura, and Aftermath. And those of you who have ever suffered from this will recognize this. Claudia now, her work now, sometimes almost seems clairvoyant. First, part of the world disappears. Something is missing from everything. The cat's eye, ear, the left side of its face, two fingers from my right hand, the words from the end of a sentence. The absence is at first more absolute than whatever darkness I imagine the blind perceive. Perfect, without color or motion, nothing replaces what is gone. The senses do not contradict. My arm goes numb, my leg. Though I have felt the cold air of this disappearance before, each time the aura deceives me to believe reality itself has failed. I fear this more than what it warns, because I cannot remember I will survive it. The other half of me will shine all night, defined by the eclipse. Then, in the relieved wake of the day that follows it, I will find my hand, count my fingers, and beginning to see again, will recognize myself, restored to the evening of a righted room.
At this time, I'll invite anyone in the audience who would like to read one of Claudia's poems, if you'd like to come up. Catherine Staples.
First saw Claudia's work in Blackbird, and I just fell in love with it. And I looked at her picture, and I read the description, and I plotted that I would go to my first conference and study with her. And I was lucky enough to meet her at Sewanee and to be her fellow in 2013. And like so many of you, she was the best teacher I ever had. Smart, funny, curious, devoted, and endlessly generous. I love these Claude poems, and if there's anyone who can transcend time and space, I believe it's Claudia. I feel like she's still helping me every day when I write. And this is before space. You crawl on top of what had been the field this summer. The leaves clouded in white cloth beneath you. You think to sleep the night it takes to get the tobacco crop to market. The wagons rumbling, lessened by the load. You wake, though, at the sound of your father's voice telling you to. His arm out as though sighting something between the mule's ears. What do you see? And you know what it is they are. The two being spheres of light at the horizon. So you say it, two moons. And he laughs that you could easier imagine that than the automobile's headlamps. It still makes for a better answer, Claude says. The heavens transfigured in that one night. Or that you could imagine such a thing. And now it is not the stuff of your imagination or the television screen. This thing they have named everyone's comet. That you call it yours, because it is so close to you, you don't even need binoculars to see it. To notice its long hair streaming behind it, as though wind-blown or gravity-blown. Something falling through, it is not. Something on fire, you would have said, had your father set this instead in the sights between the mule's ears. Because you had seen what can happen when you lean in too close. And your naked eye is enough, as it has to be when you stay up all night at the tobacco barn, where you are to feed the small fires in the ovens made from mud and dust, like daubers' nests, from where you can see no other light beyond those small leading ones that are not fixed parts of a patterned sky. Unlike this bright body, so new to you. Moving low against the same horizon, it is enough to love the world again. The heavens changed, and not by something with a flameless tail of gases and dust. They say its core a nucleus of ice. But by what you would have said and still think when you watch for it of an evening, this late, unmistakable surprise. A woman's face, gravity's fire. See how she leans into you.
I first met her really in a bookstore before there was that Pulitzer star on My Wife. I tend to be the kind of person bookstore owners hate. I preview the book for 5 or 6 pages before I buy it, and most of them go back on the shelf. Late Wife went home with me that day. And so when I had the chance to meet her, I met one of the most joyous people. And since we had a lot of people talk about Sewanee, she comes to all the readings. She did all the work, every fellow reading. She came to mine. She gave me notes. I was not her fellow. She came to every staff reading, as Erica and Adam could attest. She worked hard, and she worked joyfully. And I had the great fortune and great tragedy of seeing the tenacious grace that she displayed once she was ill. I was there in 2014 when most people would have taken to bed, and when she did a decade and a half worth of composition in 18 months, and it continues to blow me away. This is from Impossible Bottle, Last the Night. Sickness kept her house the way winter kept the garden, a betrothal. What had been forgotten at its outset remained so. What little it did not recall, uneasy, vague, the birdbath's surface opaque as milk glass, the pansies in bright collapse, the male collected like leaves, wind gathered in corners, books she had abandoned, face down, every one somewhere near a beginning, but the sundial remain fluent in light, in time, and afternoons slowly return to her, tempting the window open wide as though for milder air, her elbow on the sill, a cusp where she learned to trick birds into mistaking her cupped hand for the feeder she had hung next to it, her arm like the thin column of a candle. And she had perfected its going away with night, the way it did not tremble beneath the flame. I'm Will Wells.
I'm Patience, and I'm actually a fiction person and wasn't even a writer before ECU, really. Early on, I was coming out of the English department office, and there she was, just sitting on a bench as if it was just Providence. And she struck up a conversation with me. I mean, I knew who she was because we'd been introduced, and I was blown away, like, here's this Pulitzer Prize winner talking to me as if I was somebody. And she said to me, you know, I thought I was a fiction writer. And so I applied to both fiction and poetry, and they told me I was a poet. But I was thinking, when you were talking about the I am, I taught yoga for 15 years, and I was thinking you meant I am, as they say in yoga, which is something like, I am the divine is within me. And so we all are I am. And it wasn't until, like you said, the trochee, that I was like, oh, no, you're talking about I am, because I'm not a poet, so that wasn't the first thing that came to mind. But it's really, really true with Claudia. It really is, and that's why I wanted to read, because at her memorial, David Wojahn said, 100 years from now, we'll open whatever device we will be reading 100 years from now, or whoever we won't be, but, you know, our descendants, people will. And they'll be connected with Claudia, and they'll feel like they were understood. And so this poem, the first poem from Late Wife, was the first poem that made me really feel like I could read and understand and know what it is to, like, be connected to poetry. Natural History Exhibits 1. Sometimes they used the hoe or the dull blade of a shovel, a stick of firewood, sometimes the handle of the broom. I grew up around women who could kill any snake. Never mind that what the men said about moles and mice, about markings or the shape of the head. The good ones, harmless. Draping the body over a low branch, my mother would claim, still breathless from the killing, rain, this will bring rain. 2. In this city's museum, beyond the rooms of taxidermy, past the lit cases of arrowheads and spear points, snakes are kept in bright glass cells, a whole wall of them, a live mural, glistening, changing, the harmless by the deadly. I recognize, without reading the sign, the black rat snake. I know already that it kills not by sudden poison, but wraps itself instead around its prey, then tightens that embrace until it feels the fear leave with the struggle, then the breath, until the constricted heart grows still. 3. It had to have come up from the cool underbelly of the first old house we rented, climbing pipes like branches to make a nest of the rusty sink cabinet drawer where I kept the silverware. I opened it, and the snake lay coiled, brooding on the bed of edges, blades and tines, the hard bone handles, a wedding gift from my mother's aunt. The snake never raised its head. I hesitated. Then E shut the drawer. Later I would wash every fork, spoon, and knife and set the table. 4. I know now I should have killed the snake and hung its long body as straight in death as the glistening barrel of a gun. I was young, new in my marriage bed, but regret was already sunk sharp in me. Like any blade, it would grow dull slowly. The wound would heal around it until its absence would cause the greater pain. A good story, though, how I let the snake escape, drain back into the house, and for years I told at that same table what I had to tell, how it disappeared the way it came.
My name is Alicia Padovich, and I regret to say that I never got to meet Claudia, but I knew her very well thanks to my graduate school roommate who studied with her, and so I heard Claudia's name all the time, heard stories about her all the time, and I think that I know her so well. And I feel very emotional being here anyway because I get it. So my dear friend Alyssa could not be here today, and I told her it was important to me to speak for her here. So I'm going to read a poem that Alyssa asked me to read and a little bit that she said. So Alyssa wanted me to read from Pharaoh Pharaoh. And she says, "This is the poet that I first met and knew and loved. She taught me how to put my ear to the poem, and more than anything, how to write a damn ending. And like the one in this poem, it's never what you expect. I miss her every day. I hope she is proud of me." Mrs. Hawk. A deer scut rocks away from the road's white ellipses. Fish rise, slow in the still pond. Smoke falls from the chimney's mouth as you, always at your window, watch your sunflower seed draw songbirds. Small worries squabble, flutter in and out. My shadow flags the clean spires of trees, freezes in the garden a rabbit who does not trust what blocks the sun, but what you enjoy is this, span of wings, their rare calm beat, my tail a red fan open, you think, to catch the sun, compliment the sky. Look away or watch, hunger for your songbird that flies no higher than roses climb, will lift it from its precious nest, deliver it of its cooling eggs, even as it dies, even as it climbs these deeper currents with me, even as you see in this what you need, and try even now to love me. Listen, these wings are not my wings. These bones are not my bones. I spit them out. This song is not my song. Mine, this denial, unmeasured, unsung, I hurl it, unfeathered and bone hollowed, down.
My name is Chelsea Krieg, and I had the honor of working with Claudia as one of her students at the University of Mary Washington years ago. She's the reason why poetry exists for me. I came at it more of, this is something I like to do. No one really understands that in my life, and Claudia helped make me realize that this was something I could throw myself into, that it could be something I could hold on to. She was my teacher. I first met her, well, saw her from afar, as an eager freshman at Mary Washington, sitting in a big room for a Lit Mag meeting, of which she was the sponsor of the undergrad journal. I just remember, oh God, she's so cool. Maybe I'll get to meet her one day. And that was sort of the extent of my thought, but of course, as all of us in this room know, Claudia just permeates all of your sort of anticipated, you know, the buildup that you have around these figures. She told me about the roll of Pulitzer stickers in her office drawer. She's like, I don't really know what to do with them. And I was like, well, you can put them on recommendation letters you write for me. That's really fine if you like. Speaking of that, I'm now at North Carolina State's MFA program in my second year, about to graduate. And so I applied there when I was living in Spain the summer before Claudia passed, and she wrote my recommendation letter, but she called all of the programs that I applied to personally, and is the reason why I'm here. One last thing I wanted to say is, it's so wonderful to walk around this conference in the book fair and just see Claudia's work still being published, and just the fact that she's still living on the page is just so important to everyone. So this is one I picked up today. It's called The Story. Perhaps it was never hers to tell, with no one to tell it to. And so it became this, the early 1930s, and she was unmarried in nursing school, her uniform and apron, like a butcher's, long and white, as at the bleached beginning of a day, or a curtain drawn at the end. The rest of her wasted behind it, behind the quickening, her spine vulnerable as a sapling and as a woeful. Perhaps she was trying to give it back when she threw it down the hospital's elevator shaft, determined to return somehow what cannot be returned. The bell's toll, sworn oath, curse hurled into the eye of a well. That hollow column, dry oblivion catching the backward born. Temporary madness was the diagnosis, a kind of forgiveness that must have been its own damnation. severest mercy, every other child she bore its voice, that healthy a cry, inconsolably so.
My name is Gordon Coppola, and I am one step removed from knowing Claudia, and so I envy all of you who knew her in life. In August 2014, by employment accident, I moved to Chatham, Virginia, into some very nice loft apartments in an old elementary school. In January 2015, my mentor, Sandra Beasley, suggested that I annotate the book Late Life. I got so much out of that book that I decided to read and study all of Claudia's books, and I wrote my critical essay on her use of metaphor, which is both very natural and amazingly deep and profound at the same time. This poem that comes from a book where she wrote about her father and her brother dying. Her father was very old, Secure the Shadow, of course, and her brother who died in his 50s of cancer. And there's a video online of Claudia reading this poem, Old Elementary, at the location about 2 years before the building is renovated, and I can see the window that I used to look out. And so even though I never had the opportunity to meet her or to learn from her, she teaches me every day what it means to be a poet. And so I'm going to read Old Elementary. Terrified or furious, my brother would call me. It's in there, he'd swear, in the old elementary. Desperate to blame something, asbestos, radiation, unhappiness itself, to place. Displace the cancer onto the first school he despised, in the despised small town where he grew up, where we grew up. I drive past it every time I go back there, building abandoned, years ago by all but vagrant pigeons. The utter childlessness of the playground fronts it, lifeless swings, foot-worn furrows beneath, once slick from use, almost closed over, a cicatrix of dandelions and wire grass, then the stern-faced architecture, strict dormers, the heavy recessed doors through which we entered. Two stories, walls, all windows, every one he stared out from, his back to hissing radiators, oil-polished wood floors, crayon wax, pencil shavings, the chronic dust of lead, chalk, faint fear, and the long hallways, not hard for me to imagine empty, dimly lit where I recall waiting for him one cavernous afternoon when all the other children had been released, and he was kept after, inside, in there, for punishment, in there, for some small, forgotten thing.
Thank you again for coming here today and helping us celebrate and give voice to Claudia's work. I hope that we can go out from here and continue to do that in our lives, in our classrooms, and in our personal reading habits. So thank you all so much for being here. Let's give all of our readers just a round of applause for participating.